court will proceed to the sixth case, the United States versus Miranda. Mr. Morris?
Good afternoon. May it please the court, Mr. Murray. There was extensive and undisputed evidence that Luis Miranda suffered from severe mental illness. He had suffered from schizoaffective disorder. He had major depression. He suffered from delusions. He heard voices telling him to do things. There was uncontradicted evidence from a psychiatrist who examined him that he heard these voices and that they were a primary motivation for his robbing the bank. The government presented no briefs, no witnesses, didn't cross-examine Dr. Johanna, except to bring out something that had already been conceded, which was that Mr. Miranda also used drugs and that was also a contributing factor, but not the primary one in the motivating him to rob the bank. The law in this jurisdiction, and in fact all over the country, is clear, and I quote from the Dyer case from the circuit, a person who acts under the effect of disease is not as evil, as worthy therefore of punishment, as one who would be law-abiding were he not mentally impaired. And we provided to the district judge extensive briefing on the relevance of mental illness, and particularly Mr. Miranda's mental illness, to the factor of deterrence, to the factor of desert, and also to incapacitation.
And, now, excuse me.
Sure.
The psychiatrist testified that Mr. Miranda understands the nature of his crime, which I take to mean he currently understands it now that he's being treated. Is there any evidence that he understood it at the time of the crime?
Well, I think that's part of the district judge's error. I mean, the only time the judge addresses, and in fact he focuses on, did he know what he did, know right from wrong? That's not the standard. That's not the standard under 5K2.13, which has two alternate standards in defining whether there's significantly reduced mental capacity. The first is, did he understand the wrongfulness of the behavior comprising the offense? And the second is, was he able to control behavior that the defendant knows is wrong? So the issue here is control. If someone's overwhelmed by a disease of their brain, and if that was the sole cause, then it would be improper to punish them at all. They simply wouldn't have any responsibility. If they're completely overwhelmed by a disease, now we don't say that's what's the case here. We say it was the predominant cause. And the judge fails ever, first of all, to make any finding as to whether or not Miranda did suffer from this disease, although he says that Dr. Johanna was credible. And it's really the only point at which he actually addresses these material issues, which he's required to address under both Cunningham and Dean and other cases. He said, and this is really the nub of his opinion, even when the court considers, and considering the reports relating to the diagnosis of the defendant, the court concludes that the defendant understood the nature of his crime and was aware that he was committing the crime, and therefore he should be held accountable for his conduct. Well, we agree he should be held accountable for his conduct. That doesn't address the mitigating factor, which was he must have found by preponderance of the evidence, because there was no evidence going the other way. There's nothing to suggest he wasn't suffering from delusions. And in fact, the only other there's evidence in the pre-sentence report and in his criminal history that he had mental health problems and was delusional. This isn't a fabrication. In the year before, he decides to kill himself. His wife calls the police, and he's arrested, taken to a psychiatric hospital. The psychiatric records are in the they note that he's delusional and that he's suffering from all kinds of mental health problems. That was a second issue that we raised with the judge, that his criminal history category 3 substantially overstates his criminal history. He has no history of actually ever hurting anybody, of committing any crimes other than these two minor offenses which grow out of his effort to kill himself. One was that he possessed a gun, which was simply that it wasn't registered properly, and the second is that when they came back to arrest him after he's gone to the psychiatric institution, They come back to arrest him, and all these facts are undisputed. They find a small amount of crack, 3 grams or something, because he's a drug addict, and he's self-medicating to deal with his mental health problems. So the judge basically, without making any specific finding about all of this, ignores it and sentences him to a sentence within the guidelines, but in excess of even what the government recommended and was agreed to in the plea agreement. I don't know, it's almost like I don't know that I need to say more. The court also made erroneous findings of fact in supporting its reason for the sentence. The judge said that the sentence was to protect banking institutions, the institutions of banking. Well, that's true of every bank robbery, and it's got nothing to do with the specific facts of this case. He said that the one of the reasons that he didn't think that Mr. Miranda was suffering from mental illness was that this wasn't a spontaneous, impulsive crime because he was wearing a disguise. But there's no evidence that he was wearing a disguise. In fact, the pre-sentence report and all the records indicate that what happened was he put on a baseball cap and sunglasses. He goes into the bank, and their cameras capture his picture. He's in the newspaper the next day on the front page, and his wife calls him and says, "Look at the front page of the local paper, you idiot." And she calls the police. So he wasn't very well disguised.
Did she get the reward? No.
Pardon? I think sadly they've divorced now. So this man has the district judge further never addresses the issue, the material issue of deterrence, and the fact, which is undisputed, there's less reason to punish a mentally ill person because they cannot be deterred. To the extent that they're overridden by mental health problems, punishment can't deter them. The judge speaks of general deterrence, but he never mentions specific deterrence. In terms of desert, as I read to you the Dyer case, the Poff case I liked. It involved a woman who wrote threatening letters to Ronald Reagan. It was an en banc decision. Both the majority and the minority, though, agreed on the principle that mental health was a basis for a reduced sentence. In the dissent, Judge Easterbrook said, "The criminal justice system long has meted out lower sentences to persons who, although not technically insane, are not in full command of their actions. Under both the desert approach to sentencing and the deterrence approach, mental states short of insanity are important. Persons who find it difficult to control their conduct do not, considerations of dangerousness to one side, deserve as much punishment as those who act maliciously or for gain." And the majority, Judge Flom wrote the very same principle applied. There was a battle over what was a violent offense and whether the guideline applied, but we don't have that anymore because 3553 clearly encompasses desert. I'll save the rest of my time unless there are questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Morris. Mr. Murray?
May it please the court, my name is Tyler Murray, and I represent the United States, the appellee in this case.
Your Honor.
So, Mr. Murray, the court seems to have confused an insanity defense with diminished capacity that would justify a lower sentence. And that certainly seems like an error of law to me. How can we affirm when the court based its sentence on an error of law?
Are you referring to the portion of the district court's reasoning where he states that this was, and I think that the nature of his comments is that this was not an impulse type of thing. There was planning involved and the like, and therefore he knew what he was doing. Well, I don't think that was the sole basis. I believe he also
No, you're right. He considered facts that aren't relevant at all to sentencing, such as protecting a defendant from himself and fixing the sentence. I mean, surely you'll concede that protecting a defendant from himself is not a valid sentencing consideration, is it?
Judge, I don't believe the Seventh Circuit case law would support that as a basis for the sentence here, but there are a host of other reasons that the district court goes through in fashioning his sentence. He emphasizes the seriousness of the offense, the need to impose a just punishment. He looks, again, starting at the top of 3553 factors, he looks at the nature and circumstances of the offense. He says, and this is based in part on Dr. Johanna's testimony, that he understood the nature of his crime, he was aware of what he was doing, and by a disguise, not to get into semantics, but he had on glasses and a hat, so there was some planning involved. He talks about the stability of banking institutions, the necessity to preserve that. He stresses the need for mental health and drug treatment. He does underscore the need for deterrence here. He talks about how this sentence will send a message to others who are contemplating bank robbery.
Well, tell me how a stiff sentence here deters others who are hearing voices from committing bank robbery unless they hear the voice of Judge Duryodhan.
I don't know that there was there was not a finding. So I think one thing that we have to do is take a step back to what exactly the testimony was. And it was not that but for hearing these voices, this bank robbery would not have been committed. On cross-examination, Dr. Johanna conceded that it was a contributing factor, along with drug use and the like. So there's nothing in the record to indicate that it was, even out of the doctor's own mouth, these voices that were the even primary, let alone sole factor, that directed Miranda to go commit this bank robbery. It was a contributing factor, among a host of other things, including the fact that he was under the influence of cocaine and heroin at the time of the robbery. I would emphasize that the sentence here was 50 months, and the guideline range is 46 to 57 months. So the starting point for this court's analysis is that the sentence was presumptively reasonable.
What exactly did the government request as a sentence?
46 months. 46. What was the proposed sentence under the plea agreement?
Yeah.
So, with a sentence of 50 months, when the range is 46 to 57 months, the court does not have to go into detail with each of the 3553A factors in checklist fashion going through each of them, but it did expound on detail as it just went through why that sentence was appropriate.
But even if many of the reasons are just flat out wrong, how can we help our district courts out if we, allow them to do that?
Judge, the only reason that I would say, that the government would say is in dispute here, is whether, in terms of its validity, is whether or not protection of oneself is a legitimate basis for incarceration. The other reasons, deterrence, safety of the public, stability of banking institutions, the need for mental health treatment, and frankly, if someone is hearing voices, the need for incapacitation to protect the public. If anything, that augurs in favor of a higher sentence.
To put people in prison instead of hospitals, or?
Well, I believe the district court judges are familiar with prisons that, in conjunction with the Bureau of Prisons, that do have appropriate mental health treatment facilities. And that's something that Judge Duryodhan emphasized in a couple places in his opinion. In fact, there's a couple of highlights I'd like to point the court to. On pages 40 and 41, he talks about necessary and appropriate treatment for mental health. Page 39, he acknowledges the delusions. On page 38, he acknowledges the voices that were heard. So all of these things were taken into consideration by the district court. He just ultimately found that even considering these factors, that Mr. Miranda was aware, consistent with Dr. Johanna's testimony, of what he was doing.
Now, Mr. Murray, the government's brief didn't distinguish Cunningham, which bears a striking resemblance to this case. Can you distinguish Cunningham?
In Cunningham, I think the concern was that the district court just skirted over the issue. Here, the district court went into detail, and I just pointed to the pages 38, 39, 40, of what Dr. Johanna's testimony was. And he simply found that even with that testimony, an appropriate sentence fell within the guidelines range, again, at the low end of the guidelines range, and simply did not warrant a below-guideline sentence. It was not the situation in Cunningham where there was little to no attention to the primary mitigating factor raised by the defendant. Here, I don't believe there is an issue as to whether the district court judge either understood or took into consideration Dr. Johanna's testimony. He simply did not believe it was a basis to go below the guidelines.
You see, in Cunningham, the judge, it seems to me, passed over in silence the principal argument regarding diminished mental capacity. Here, our judge confused an insanity defense with diminished capacity.
Judge, I don't believe that the district court judge rested its opinion on the fact that there was or was not an irresistible impulse here. I believe the court adequately considered the condition, took it into consideration as a contributing factor, among other contributing factors, sentenced Mr. Miranda to a sentence at the low end of the guidelines range, and simply did not agree that it warranted a sentence below that range.
Anything further?
Any questions from the court? In wrapping up then, judges, I would simply like to state that the court imposed a sentence at the low end of the guidelines range, gave what I would consider a thorough examination of the 3553A factors, expressly considered the primary argument in mitigation, including a whole host of reasons beyond whether there was planning or not involved. And for that reason, the government respectfully request that the sentence be affirmed.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Murray. Mr. Morris. Mr. Morris, your argument isn't that the judge thought he was holding a competency hearing rather than a sentencing hearing, are you?
I think there were certainly elements of that, exactly. I mean, I think the judge wasn't clear on what the standard was, and certainly whether he was or was not, he didn't apply it. He simply didn't ever address, and there was not one word said about the criminal history and the fact that these two convictions came out of a history of mental illness. That was not discussed at all.
Presented before him by way of argument.
Yes, and the supplemental brief before the, and then Mr. Miranda testified only on that issue, and the government declined to ask him any questions after he explained the circumstances.
It's actually pretty amazing. It seems to me that he has a criminal category of Roman numeral 3. Because the firearms charge came out of an FOD card that had expired, and you know he had those 3 grams,
yeah.
Grams of cocaine.
Well, I want to. I see my lights going off, and it's been a long day.
Don't feel rushed. That's just a warning light, Mr.
Thank Morris. You. Mr. Murray asked Dr. Johanna specifically whether or not it was the product, I'll read it to you. It's on page, appendix 31. It's page 23 of the transcript. Now, you can't say here today that had he not heard these voices, he would not have robbed the bank. It's the classic cross-examination question. And the doctor says, well, of course, you can never say, predict, you know, what might have happened. But he, as I said, I thought this was the predominant reason Now, there was representation that that wasn't in the record. It is in the record that it's the predominant reason, and the judge found Dr. Johanna credible, but simply doesn't apply, doesn't take the next steps, which is to say, well, what now is the relevance of that under 35?
If the judge had sentenced at the 46-month level, would your argument still be the same?
Yes, I think this is an unusual case where, even though it's within the guidelines and there's this perhaps still surviving presumption, it was improper, and certainly on the basis of this record, procedurally improper, to have sentenced him at the level that he was sentenced. There was no aggravating evidence. All the things that were itemized were just things that happen in any bank robbery. Any bank robbery involves some upset to the victims, although here there was, the government's version didn't even talk about victim impact. So there were none of the reasons the judge gave were other than generic reasons, and he simply ducked all of the material compelling evidence that poor Mr. Morris.
Mr. Morris, would he have had to say that he disagrees with the doctor as to the it being the predominant? If he did say that, would then this sentence be basically unassailable?
Well, my fear is that we're in a sort of a perpetual loop, that this will go back. And I think there's two things that the judge could have said which would have made this appeal much harder. One is that he doesn't find it credible that Mr. Miranda was hearing voices commanding him to do this. And secondly, that even though the judge does find that he heard voices, he gives it no weight. And I think he has very broad discretion, as this court continues to say, there's this very broad discretion, as long as you follow the rules. So I think we could be in a much weaker position than we are right now. But my worry is that it'll go back and that the judge will simply say that and we'll be no further along.
Right. I mean, if you had a remand in this case and the judge explained that the reason he didn't give 57 months, another 7 months, was because he took into account those factors, where would we be?
I think that would insulate the All right. Here we are. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. Mr. Morris, an additional thanks to you for accepting this appointment and so ably representing Mr. Miranda.
Thank you.
Case is taken under advisement. Court will stand in recess.